This is for the men who never settle. The ones who believe only quitters end a game in a tie. The type of guys who choose the bar with the biggest TVs to overcompensate for theirs at home. This is the Lodge mentality. This is Twin Peaks.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. A very lively show. Some wild accusations being made at the end of the last hour. Now we have, to continue the energy, Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Can we get you a cup of mushroom coffee by any chance?
Nothing.
All right. No, nothing? All right, same approach as Buster Olney. Wants nothing to do with it. Okay.
No, thank you. There, I'm on. No, thank you. No mushroom, no coffee.
Okay.
None of either. Maybe on pizza.
Delicious. I'm a mushroom guy. You know, this mushroom coffee does not taste good at all, but damn it, Jake has sold me on the benefits, so here I am. Day two, cup two, let's go.
Next, we'll get you microdosing.
What?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, then. We have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Look, we could dance around this topic. We could ignore the elephant in the room, but why wait? Let's get right to it. Rashee Rice, your thoughts?
Sounds like you got the sourcing, huh?
Well, he does.
Yeah.
What?
He doesn't like to tell us all, but he does.
Yeah.
It's on a need-to-know basis, and Nate, you don't need to know.
I don't need to know.
Right.
Yeah, you guys discussed this pretty well last hour. I mean, we all have to wait for facts to come out, but, you know, Nate being old man aside, I think that's the question right now, right? You're already sort of in this position where there's going to be a lot of eyes on you, that you can't really mess up, that your team is watching, that potential victims are watching, that are suing you. The NFL is watching. Everyone's watching. And so this would have been a good time to probably lay low a little bit. And whether it happened the way that people are alleging it happened or whether this happened at all, we don't really know that yet. It's just a matter of, this was a time for him to remain out of the headlines, and he hasn't. So it adds a little bit more to what has already been a difficult offseason for him, and adds a little more to the Chiefs' plate to wonder how much you can trust him moving forward. Because I think there was a lot of people were showing some grace towards him afterwards, you know, and saying, "Hey, this could have been worse, but everybody makes mistakes," that sort of thing. And again, we don't know the facts of this one yet, but the fact that he was out again in Texas and that is brought back into the headlines, I don't think this is going to end up going well for him, even if all things are cleared, just because the NFL does not like these things to continue to pop up. And so whatever suspension is coming out and will be out at whatever point, I think they're going to have to take this into account, even if he's cleared of all these charges. Or not charges, I should say, just being cleared of being investigated.
Right. Accusations, allegations.
Yeah.
And I had said a couple of days ago, who am I to tell anyone where to live and what to do with their lives? But if I was a member of the Chiefs front office, I would, especially after this latest incident, no matter what happens, I would strongly suggest, hey, let's spend less time in Dallas. Let's get out of Texas. And I wondered, you know, is that being ridiculous? But that was one of the first things that Gary Dieter said.
Yeah.
And then Anthony Sherman said that. And those are veteran guys that have been in the locker room, that have been around young players and veterans and been around all kinds of situations. And I know enough about my past that I had to remove myself from certain situations and being around certain people and certain neighborhoods. And so it's not, I don't think it's ridiculous, because like you said, at the very least, after the first incident with the race in the cars and everything else, and he was with former SMU teammates, you know, you got to lay low. You just got to make different decisions. And you can't compare it when people say, well, weren't you 21 or 22 years old once? Yeah, but I didn't have the responsibility of representing an NFL organization with a huge contract on the books and everything else. It's, you know, you have different expectations. And then when you have something like that happen, you just got to know, well, you know what? I can't do things as normal. I got to keep myself out of the public eye. I got to, maybe normally I'd go here or go there, but maybe I got to stay home. Maybe it's got to, you know, lay low. He didn't do that. He's in a situation at 2:30 a.m. at the club, whatever he was doing, where now there's accusations and allegations. Do we know what happened? No, we've pretty much heard just one side of the story. But now it's just these things, it's perception, right? This is going to follow him around. And something that you said early on that I've thought about a couple of times, you're not just talking about how this affects him now. This is all going to go into when it's time for a second contract. And if a team is going to want to invest a big amount of money with anyone that has red flags or question marks of whether or not you could trust them or believe them or feel comfortable that they're going to make right decisions.
Or even if he gets to a second contract.
Whatever. We don't know any of this yet, right? But there's enough to where this is a concern. The NFL doesn't like it. The Chiefs can't like it. And so they have to react. Adam Schefter reports that Zay Jones is going to be in town to meet with the Chiefs today. Do you think that was going to happen anyway once he was released by Jacksonville? Or do you think that was just added to the docket after what we found out? Because I have to wonder about the timing of Tyler Boyd signing the same day that this came out for 1 year, up to $4.5 million. If this would have happened last week, would the Chiefs have jumped on Tyler Boyd for that price tag? Or are they just bringing in Zay Jones because this happened? Or was that always going to be the plan?
I think you're right to bring it up. I mean, I asked Brevich after the draft, I said, what holes, if any, do you want or do you need to now fill in free agency after the draft? And he said he wanted to get through camp. He wanted to see how the young guys did. He wanted to, you know, things can happen. You know, people can get hurt. You can learn more information, whatever. But he wanted to get through these camps and figure out, kind of reevaluate, and then potentially you can bring on somebody late if you need depth at a certain position. But he did not come out and say, I need to go out and get a wide receiver. And that's why when we talked about it last week, I said, hey, this is what Brett Veach said. And usually he's pretty honest and upfront of these sorts of things. He wants to get through this. You know, at the time, I think you could envision a scenario where, sort of like last year with the Chiefs, certain guys you're going to miss for three or four games. Certain guys you just pencil in and you say, okay, well, whether it's injury or suspension or whatever the case may be, you can fill in for those few games. You know what I'm saying? But the indication was that they were pretty happy with what they had, and if they had to go out and get something later, they would go do it. And then all of a sudden, the Rashee Rice thing happens, and then now Zay Jones is visiting. I mean, I don't have inside info, but I don't think it's a coincidence. I think this is people speak with their actions. You know what I mean? And up until now, there was no action taken for the Chiefs to potentially bring in another wide receiver to this room to fill it out as a free agent until today. So I don't think you're wrong to read into that, because everything Brett Veach said before this sort of indicated that they were good to go with what they had. Now I think maybe the timeline changes a little bit based off what Rashee Rice has gotten himself into.
Well, because we were talking about this last couple of days. We saw this list of teams that he's visiting. Like, well, why aren't the Chiefs on this list? And all of a sudden, the Chiefs are
on the list at the very end, yeah.
Right. And so for Zay Jones, and I'm not telling you that he's going to come in here and be the one or the two or the three or whatever else, but even before the stuff with Rashee Rice happened, I thought they should be interested in another veteran wide receiver. And I'm going to tell you this. With all the things that are out there up in the air we don't know, I'm not letting him leave without signing him to a deal, because it shouldn't be that much, right? I mean, I don't know what – I mean, did you – Tyler Boyd, that was less than what we thought.
Yeah.
That was a lot less than what we thought.
Nate, were you going to say something?
Well, I'll go ahead.
Well, I think that, you know, the Chiefs have spent some money this offseason, you know. The Chris Jones thing, it limits them, and now these extensions are coming up. You know, at every point in the offseason, we want them – we talk about them, you should do this, you should do that, you should do this. I mean, they've got a couple of extension things coming up here. Creed Humphrey, Trey Smith, Nick Bolton, all these things that I'm sure fans are going to want to be like, well, sign those guys. Of course, sign them. So it seemed like they were kind of trying to reserve as much money as they could to make sure that they could lock up potentially two of those guys and kind of keep this thing rolling. So you're right. I mean, some things are not very cost prohibitive to do, and potentially if you sign him to something pretty cheap, that's fine. From what Brad Sheets said last week, I think they were in a point where they were going to try to let this thing roll and not have to spend any more free agency dollars. If it's cheap, fine. If he wants to come for – and that's what we don't know. Like, if the Chiefs bring him in and say, look, we're just up against it on the cap here because of what's about to happen, we'll let you sign for vet minimum and try to go chase the three-peat and be a winner like these other guys have been, You know, some guys, that'll be good. They'll take that. They'll say, hey, let's go with it. And for some of the guys, they'll say, no, I'll go take the highest offer. I don't know that with the Chiefs, but, yeah, that's – I don't think they're desperate for a receiver. I mean, we've seen them win with lesser receiver talent in the last couple of years. But to your point, Stephen, the floor is very low right now. You know what I mean? Like the potential there, if things don't go right with Rashee Rice, all of a sudden – you're left without the guy that was most reliable last year, and then you're relying on these new pieces that are coming in and hoping that they can even get them to the level that last year where everybody was disappointed in for most of the season. So it's a tricky thought here, and that's the reason, obviously, they want to bring him in, at least talk to him and see if this could be a potential fit.
Look, they can I say something real quick?
No.
Please. I get your point, and yes, look, like they've proven last year, like they proved that they can get a whole lot out of a little, and wide receivers struggling. But do you really want to put Patrick Mahomes through that again?
Yeah, but they weren't going to. They already went out and they got they already got Hollywood Brown, and then they drafted an elite speed weapon at wide receiver. If you're coming into this season and you're telling me you got Travis Kelce, Rashee Rice, Hollywood Brown, Worthy, and Watson, who was a weapon, and then you also still have Noah Gray and add another tight end to it, I'm going, damn, this looks far better than what they had last year.
And I'm still
going into the season.
Another receiver.
Maybe, but I could also see them going, no, we want to save that money to be able to extend some of the offensive linemen that we have, you know, bump up some of the contracts that we have on other guys so that they don't cost money down the road. I could see them going that route. But with Rice's situation and this follow-up instance that's happened, I'm going to put myself in a Chiefs fan's shoes. Like, I would be furious with Brett Veach if he isn't reacting to this.
Yeah.
It almost seems like it would be malpractice. I mean, yeah, we don't know the details of this, but it doesn't look good. And the first instance was really serious in the first place. That was a big deal, what happened. And like you said, we're trying to be charitable about it and go, hey, man, people make mistakes. Luckily, it wasn't a fatal mistake for anybody. But it was a big deal. This is a huge situation he's got on his hands. And then to have this happen weeks later, If Brett Veach isn't reacting to this, I'm almost like, what are you doing? How does this not create more urgency, you know, for you as a wide? Because as we talked about, Rice was a huge component to the offense as the season went on, even bigger and bigger. And I can understand him going, you know what, we can get through the first 6 weeks of the season without him. But now, to me, like, you have to start to ask yourself, not only is the NFL going to take him away from us, do we even want him? I think that question has to be being at least asked right now. You know, and I'm not saying the answer is no, but if you're not considering, like, what's going on here? Is this going to be a repeat problem for us going forward? Do we have a bad character on our hands?
You can't trust them.
You have to ask yourself that question.
You can't trust them at this point.
And again, I say that all under the umbrella of we don't know the details of this situation yet. I'm not saying you know the answers, but if you aren't actively trying to find out, I would be stunned if Brett Veach isn't reacting that way right now.
I think what we're talking about here too, Nate, is people want Rashee Rice to succeed here. You know
yes.
what I mean? He has every opportunity, every resource, every person in his corner that can – If he came up to somebody and said, look, guys, when I'm in Dallas, people know me there, things don't go right, whatever the case, I need to move to Kansas City in the offseason. I mean, boom, 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 it's done. You know what I mean?
Roll out the red carpet.
He's got it. You know? He's got it. It's so, to your point on the trust issue, like, at some point here, there needs to be a coming to the middle where it's like, hey, man, look.
You got to want this a little bit,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, yeah. Like the old adage, you know, you can lead a horse to water, you can't make him drink. Like, at some point, Rashee Rice has got to want to not be in the news anymore. I mean, he's out of these sorts of things. Has there been another NFL player in the last 2 months that has had a headline like this, and he's had two? I mean, at some point, there's got to be I want to do better. I want to be better. I want to not have this thing blow up on me, and I want to be in a place where an environment where this is going to help me rather than hurt me. And again, a lot of those questions go back to Rashee Rice, and if those aren't coming, those answers aren't coming from Rashee Rice, then that's what you're talking about with Brett Veach, is all of a sudden you have a front office that needs to say, we have to figure out plan B. We have to figure out something else going on here, because this sort of thing this sort of thing, whatever it was, however it happened, he shouldn't have been in the headlines a few weeks later. It shouldn't happen. It should not happen.
You think he signs Zay Jones?
I mean, if you're Zay Jones, I don't know why you wouldn't want to sign with the Chiefs, right?
Right.
This is sort of the thing. It really could come down to a dollar thing. We've seen this in the past with the Chiefs where some guys will come in and they'll say, hey, look, we can't offer you much money, but if you want to sign here, we take you. If that's the thing with the Chiefs, then that's up to Zay Jones, really. Because he's being wooed a little bit, you know what I mean? Like, that's pretty evident here from all these visits he's taken. So, they could. I don't think they're going to outbid people. That's my take on it. I think we all understand why they signed Chris Jones, and we all know why Patrick Mahomes makes $1 zillion, because he's worth it. And like Clark Hunt said, he'll never be overpaid with the Chiefs based off what he does with the community and all those things. But it does create a reality now for the Chiefs, just that you can't have your Sammy Watkins anymore. You know what I mean? Like, Mahomes is not on his rookie contract. You can't just go and spend sort of somewhat recklessly to get you over the top. Every dollar has to be accounted for. And so they're bringing him in. They obviously have interest. But I do think that this would be something that has to fit in the budget.
You think if the timing was just a little bit different, than Tyler Boyd's a Chief? Because that contract really surprised me.
Yeah, I don't know that. I don't know. The Chiefs are just, again, I'm trying to keep zooming out, because this even goes into how they draft people. You know what I mean? Like, they've been really smart about, they in the early rounds go get edge rushers. They try to go get receivers. They try to get offensive tackles. You know, they're not these teams that are going out there and using these top picks on anymore, on running backs or linebackers or, I mean, they really have to hit on these guys because those guys cost in free agency. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So just from a whole big picture team building standpoint, like you said, Steve, I mean, Tyler Boyd was cheap at 4.5. Hollywood Brown was obviously a great deal, it seems like, unless he just gets hurt or something. I mean, that seemed like the very reasonable amount that for a guy that wanted to chase success, playing with a good quarterback, a Super Bowl ring. So I guess anything could fit in your budget. I just wonder the ramifications because, I mean, out of those three guys, you'd preferably, when talking about Creed, Trey Smith, and Nick Bolton, you want to sign all of them, right? And then, oh, by the way, the next year comes up, and you've got that whole 2022 class, which you just hit the jackpot on. Like, are you not going to want to extend McDuffie? Are you not going to? I mean, mm-hmm. So these financial situations are just going to keep popping up every year. And I don't mean to make out like $4.5 million is going to end their budget. It's not. But everything now just has, it has a domino effect. And so it's something they have to look into every single time they do something like this. They really, it hurts a little bit more now than maybe it did in the past.
We have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star in studio back after this on WHP. Billy Joel is 75 years old today. The great
happy birthday,
Billy Joel.
I think he has two kids younger than my daughter.
Well, the very active Billy Joel. Before we get back into football, I would like to throw this out there. I thought you might find this interesting because we had a lot of conversations earlier in the show about Bobby Witt Jr. We had Buster Olney on the show, and he said that right now Bobby Witt Jr. is his favorite to win AL MVP, and that's his AL MVP. It just hits different when Buster's saying it, right?
Yeah, it does.
And then somebody pointed out that how much the odds have changed. Before the season, Bobby Witt Jr. to win the AL MVP was plus 2,000. Right now, Juan Soto's plus 200, and Bobby Witt Jr. is plus 250 to win the AL MVP. Boy, Jake, we had a chance, and we are both stupid.
Blew it.
Let me tell you that right now.
Blew it.
Did Jake take the Reagans?
I did.
Yeah,
you
did the Reagans.
You did.
I got
so he was at least got that going for us. But David Leskey is the first one that I saw that tweeted this out, which I just find this to be remarkable. He has four more runs scored than anyone in baseball.
Mm-hmm.
He's on pace for 153. Only nine players in the modern era have scored 153 runs or more in a season. The last one to do it was Lou Gehrig in 1936. And he's on pace. He's on pace for like 45 doubles, 21 triples, 21 homers, over 50 steals, 153 runs scored, an OPS over 9, a on-base percentage near 400. And we all watch him and you think, this isn't the ceiling yet. He's 23. And like yesterday, that was his first home run in almost a month. And so there's more that's there. And so we're watching this. Like, it's when he was drafted, there was all this hype, and then he didn't live up to it right away. People questioned him repeatedly, and, you needed to be reminded, hey, he's young, he's 21, he's 22. But now, I'll be honest with you, what's going on right now is even better than I expected, and it might even get better than this. Those all-around numbers and the level of defense he's playing at shortstop. That's what gives him the edge over Soto, I think, in an AL race. Give me the shortstop. But, my God, is he good. Breaking news.
Well, this is why when we talk in the offseason about potential extension, and it's just we sat here and you asked me, like, what do you think about it? And I said, this is the guy you extend. Like, he has everything. He has all the tools. He's young. He plays the premium position. He'll age gracefully. His game will change over time, and this is what you get. I saw an earlier FanGraphs article kind of talking about the Royals, what was going right for them. And the comparison was made there to basically say, oh, yeah, if Bobby Witt continues to be A-Rod. But, I mean, like, you tell me what is – I was just looking up his walk rate because I wondered – because the one knock on him coming in is like, hey, he's not maybe as patient as he needs to be. You know, he doesn't take the walks – like some of the elite players out there. I'm looking right now. So his rookie year, 4.7% walk rate. Last year, 5.8%. This year, 9.1%. So even that is, 150% better than last year. Maybe developing that. I mean, not everybody immediately comes with that. That thing can take some time. But, I mean, if you're starting with, like, where – this is why the Royals have a – it's not a good problem. I mean, like, there are no good problems. But – their outfield has done nothing this year, but it's easy to replace outfielders. You know what's not easy to replace?
Five tool shortstops.
MVP winning shortstops, yeah, who have speed and power and, do everything.
You know the advanced stats better than me, so you could probably answer this for me. So I think it's interesting. Okay, is his walk rate getting better because he's being more selective about the pitches, or are pitchers being more careful with him? Like, is he seeing fewer pitches inside the strike zone? There is a chase rate stat, too,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was going to look that up real quick
this
for you.
On this homestand, Joel Goldberg tweeted out, he drew 7 walks and had 0 strikeouts on this homestand.
And at least one was intentional, right?
Boing. But you get credit for that,
yeah,
because they don't want to face
it. Oh, yeah. No, my point is, because like, there's that old question that people say, can a guy develop plate discipline, or is that just like a tool that you have? And I'm curious, like, because now that he's hitting so well, you would think pitchers are going to be more careful with him and not throw him as many strikes. Or is it just that he's not swinging at as many bad pitches?
So I'm looking real quick. And again, you get different play discipline numbers. I guess if we can just use StatCast, but it's saying that last year he swung at 31% of his pitches outside the zone. This year it's down at 29.7, so slightly better there. And then also his contact on pitches outside the zone has gone up. So 64% last year up to 68%. So again, if you foul one of those tough pitches off, you get another pitch, maybe it's a ball, those sorts of things. So two of those measurements good, but to your point, Nate, the zone percentage, the amount of pitches he gets thrown in the zone, 52% as a rookie, 51% last year, 48.7% this year. So all of a sudden, but listen, why was Barry Bonds so important to the
right.
Giants back then? I mean, nobody wanted to pitch to him. Well, great. He went to first, and he scored a – you talk about scoring runs. I mean, he scored all the runs even though he had no speed. So, yeah, that helps out the Royals offense. And, yeah, if you want to look at just – starting pitching is better, but, I mean, the two reasons the Royals have been succeeding this year are Bobby Witt and then Salvador Perez looking like he's 26 again. I mean, that and improving his framing, which I read about a couple weeks ago, always wanting to improve something. man, those two guys, even with a lot of other holes in the lineup, they really are carrying this team.
We have Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star in studio. Anything interesting of note, in your opinion, out of rookie minicamp, besides Gary Dieter walking around as a coach?
Yeah, he that was good. He was doing well out there. I think – so I wrote about this at the start of the day. You guys talked about this last hour, and I'm glad you did, because Gehrig would know this firsthand. I think one of the most promising signs, you know, we're out there for all 3 days, so we get to see the whole thing. Xavier had a couple highlight plays. His first day was really rough. I mean, just to be honest with you guys, like, it was windy outside. They were having new punt returns, and it was tough for him to catch one. I mean, like, he was having troubles catching any punts, kind of with Andy Reid kind of standing next to him. Then they went to the receiver drills. He was dropping some, and I think it was just sort of in his head. Day two, he came out and attacked it really aggressively, and I wrote about this. There was one play downfield where Chris Oladokun comes out of a play fake, and Xavier Worthy has just turned his guy completely around. He's wide open in the middle of the field, and so Oladokun kind of cocks back and throws it as far as he can, and Worthy stops and comes back to the football. It still catches it for like a 50-yard gain, but that's what we're talking about here. And, you know, even Oladokun, I asked him about that play, and he said, yeah, like, I didn't expect him to be 50 yards downfield after I did the play fake. You know, it's going to take some adjustment time to get used to speed like that. But there was another release he had on a route where a guy tried to come up and press him. And, I mean, he just put him on the ground, basically, and the whole sideline erupts. And you see
– put him on the ground by juking him?
Yeah, by juking him. And he did not get the ball that rep, but, I mean, you could tell people were taking note of this. But what you guys talked about last hour, I think it's important. He was moving around, playing different positions for them, receiver positions. And this is a big deal for the Chiefs offense, for their rookies, to know these play calls, to know which side you're lined up on, to not mess these things up, to not have to recall the huddle, all these sorts of things. They ask a lot of these receivers for their formations. And as Gehrig said last hour, it will get quicker when there are more guys out there. It will get quicker when the whole team's out in OTAs and mandatory minicamp. But the fact he is getting this right now and out there is positive for them, because it potentially means that he can help them earlier on and be relied upon earlier on. And this might be one of those reasons, as Brett Beach talked about, the general manager for the Chiefs, like, you trade up to make sure you get this guy, because this guy can help you because he's smart and help this particular offense right away. So when we're talking about guys on boards and potentially why you'd want to move up for a player, we've seen instances in the past of Chiefs receivers who rookie receivers who just, I mean, Rashee Rice is even an example. Like, they put him at one position. They wanted him to learn that position. It took a while. We kept asking those questions midseason. Why is he not out there more? Well, there were times where he wasn't lining up right. You know, he didn't understand exactly where to go. But when he got that down late in the year, and when he got confidence with that, man, his you know, natural ability took off. There's the potential there with, I asked Andy Reid about Xavier Worthy, and he said, yeah, he's a smart kid. For him to be that smart kid, to know different positions, to learn those, to be able to know where he's at and know where he's supposed to be, he might be able to help the Chiefs just a little bit quicker. And as we talked about earlier, that might help these Chiefs just depending on what happens in the receiver spot.
Okay, so I mean, we're talking about the receivers and the possibility of the Chiefs signing Zay Jones, who, according to Adam Schefter, is going to meet with the Chiefs today. Let me run through this and just get your thoughts on who's on the team for sure, in your opinion.
Yeah.
Xavier Worthy.
Yep.
Hollywood Brown.
Yep.
Rashee Rice, if he's not
yep.
suspended.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Justin Watson.
Yes.
So he's on it. Okay.
Yeah.
Sky Moore.
Yeah.
Kadarius Toney.
Yes.
Well, that's six.
Yeah.
And then you take one off if he's suspended.
Yeah. I mean, they would get that roster spot back, you would assume, if he's put on the commissioner's list. So you would add one more.
Justin Ross?
No. I mean, he'll have a chance, but
right.
not now.
But is there anyone else that, I mean, Cornell Powell, Montrell Washington, Nico Remigio?
Yeah, Remigio could have a chance after his injury.
Phillip Brooks, Hayek, the kid they signed from Villanova.
I mean, Hayek looked good out there. He'll have a chance. But, yeah, I mean, this is what we're talking about, where add one injury to that, and all of a sudden you're thinking, ooh, you know, you're starting to get down a little bit. You know, you're not liking your depth as much as you tried to add to that position. Plus, you said the uncertainty with Rashee Rice. So
Zay Jones would make sense.
A receiver would make sense. Potentially one more. And maybe you figured you could get through it if Rashee was going to be a 4-game suspension or a 6-game suspension. But potentially you're thinking now it might be a little bit longer than that.
Do you have a preference on the guys that are left? Who is it? Hunter Renfroe, Zay Jones, Michael Thomas, and then it's been floated out there that the Titans are looking to trade Treylon Burks.
Not really. I mean, the only thing about Michael Thomas is he's historically hurt. So if you're trying to raise the floor, he probably has the most potential out of those guys, but he probably has the lowest downside, which is probably what you're trying to avoid. So, I mean, the fact they're bringing Zay Jones is probably tells me that that's the guy they like out of that group and potentially think they can get for a reasonable cost.
All right. Let's take a break. We've got Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star in studio back after this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Jake's suggestion of Allen Robinson is done now that he's signed with the Giants. And so that, I apologize, Jake.
Sit at home.
Wow. You just leave it on there, don't you?
Sure, why wouldn't I?
Look at you. You are...
Look at this.
You push the envelope every single day here on this show, don't you?
You're expecting me to cut that?
No.
I was like, it's coming.
No way.
Well, in more ways than one.
It might be a little late.
Walked right into that one.
To be honest with you, not real sure how to follow up right now. Well, just trying to.
Did you guys see the Rex Udler clip? The yeah. Drop of deuce.
Oh, yeah.
That was on the outside of the plate.
That was our 30-second silence there.
Yeah. What are you working on, Jesse?
Yeah, right.
Anything you want to promote here for the Kansas City Star?
Huh? Follow that up.
No, I appreciate you linking out the story again, Rashee Rice, writing about him, and I just think it's a. I think it's a big deal. I think it's a big deal we don't talk about probably enough, just a guy being able to come in and know the offense, know the different receiver positions, and if you're able to help out in a couple different ways and have people trust you, like Patrick Mahomes, to know where you're going to be and where you need to go, then potentially you could be out there a little quicker. But, you know, we've been running through all these guys.
Mecole Hardman's still out there, too.
You know, that's...
I'm just saying.
I wouldn't rule that out.
So is MBS.
Yeah.
I would more rule that one out, but I would not...
Richie James is still out there.
There we go.
Should we rule out MBS?
I don't know. The poor problem with... the poor thing about Mecole Hardman is they gave away his number again. You know what I mean? Jared Wiley's wearing 12. So I think every number that... And Kamal Haddon, I think, is 17. So every number that Mecole Hardman has ever had with the Chiefs has been taken. So to have him come back and take a different number after winning the Super Bowl for them.
Is MVS ruled out because Hollywood Brown takes that role? Or because he just didn't produce enough last year during the regular season?
I don't know. Maybe I was too harsh.
I kind of feel like we've all assumed he's not going to be back.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, it occurred to me, like, if they're looking for another wide receiver, I know he was very disappointing all regular season, but, man, he stepped up a few times in the postseason.
I mean, knows the offense already.
Yeah. I don't know.
Like you said, that probably, I think you go out and get Hollywood because you figure he's going to take that specific role.
Yeah.
I also think, I mean, again, we base teams off of actions. When the Chiefs have needed help in the past, they went out and traded for Mecole Hardman, you know? Like, they like having him in the locker room, and they obviously like having him around. And, you know, he made a couple plays for them late and was helpful in the playoffs. And so, I don't know. I think probably personality-wise, I would just go based off the actions of the past. And he's probably not as much of a redundancy with what they have as, I mean, he's still redundant, but we'll see. We'll see. I mean, if it's out of those two guys that know the playbook, I just feel like they maybe have a softer spot in their heart for Mecole.
That's Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Thank you to all of our guests, Buster Olney, who called Bobby Witt Jr. right now, the front runner for AL MVP, and I like that. Gary Dieter and Anthony Sherman were here, and our man Jesse Newell from the Kansas City Star. Thank you so much for listening. We'll be back tomorrow to wrap the week up right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB.